Baruch Hashem, we've entered the month of Kislev. And in the month of Kislev, that means that Hanukkah is coming. And in order to prepare, the Jewish people believe in the notion that Ein Kedusha B'li Hachana, you cannot have holiness, you cannot feel sanctity without first preparing. And in order to prepare, so we need to study. And in order to study, sometimes, in order for something to hit us in a proper way, we need to increase the mystery before we increase, you know, the clarity. So, allow me to share with you several mysteries that surround the holiday of Hanukkah. Try to put them together to make a new understanding of what this whole month is about, the month of Kislev, and what the month of Kislev is about, but what the holiday of Hanukkah is about, really more specifically. Chazal tell us in source number one, the Gemara that we're learning together a little bit, the Gemara in Shabbos and Chafalaf and Beis, Mishetishka Chama Chetich LeRegel Min Hashuk. What is the time for lighting the Hanukkah candles? From the time that the sun is setting, Mishetishka Chama Chetich LeRegel Min Hashuk, until the feet disappear from the marketplace. Very strange formulation. Until the feet disappear from the marketplace. And the truth is that the word Tichla is a very harsh word. Tichla means more like destruction. So the feet are destroyed or obliterated from the street. And the Gemara tells us that this is not specifically about the shi'ur, when we're allowed to light. If a person lights beyond that time, in many circumstances you can also fulfill the mitzvah. But rather, this is to tell us maybe the amount of time. Perhaps it tells the amount of time that a person is supposed to light. That amount of time is about 30 minutes, about a half hour. That's where we get the din, the halacha, that a person is supposed to light Hanukkah candles for a half hour. But we, who are in search of the pnimius hadavar, the depth beyond just the simple reading of the Gemara, so let's try to go a little bit deeper. The Gemara continues, Ad shetich l'regel min hashuk. V'ad kama. What's called Ad shetich l'regel min hashuk? Ad shetich l'regel min hashuk, says the Gemara, in the name of Rabba Bar Bar Chana, one of the sages of the Talmud, one of the sages of the Gemara, who oftentimes is involved in esoteric teachings. The parables and the stories of Rabba Bar Bar Chana are well known. So we can expect something deep from Rabba Bar Bar Chana. Rabba Bar Bar Chana said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Ad dekalya rigla de tarmudoi. Until the feet of the tarmudoim disappear, or are obliterated. Who are the tarmudoim? So in order to access deeper understanding, we sometimes need to just work with the pshat. Rashi tells us in source number two, rigla de tarmudoi. What are the feet of the tarmudoim? Who are these tarmudoim? Shem Uma, it's the name of a nation. Malakte Eitzim Dakim. This nation had a certain proficiency in business. They were gifted with a business acumen, and they went into this business of collecting small sticks, and they would sell firewood. That was their profession. That was their national interest. They sold firewood. Eitzim Dakim. Umisakvim bashuk, and they would stay late in the marketplace more than anybody else. Ad shaholchim b'nei hashuk l'batayim, till people would go home to their houses. And when it got dark, they would go home to their houses. Mavarim b'batayim, or they would start lighting up the fires in their houses. And what would happen? These people who were the firewood sellers would stay later in the marketplace, because what would happen if you went home and you found that your firewood stockpile was depleted? So you'd go back out into the street, and the tarmudai knew they could make an extra buck if they stayed a little extra when people would come back to come by. When they found they needed logs, they needed firewood, they would come back and they'd find the tarmudayin still in the street. When those tarmudayin go home, that's called achatechle regel menashuk. Then there's no more people in the marketplace. So on the surface, again, we have here a simple halacha that's telling me that the amount of time that I light Hanukkah candles is about a half hour. From the time that the sun is setting until the feet are disappearing from the marketplace, which is the time when these tarmudayin go home, because they're the last ones who are in the marketplace. But if we want to go deeper, so then we need to understand who are these Talmudim. There's a remarkable sefer, there's an amazing sefer called the Kehilas Yaakov. The Kehilas Yaakov is a Kabbalistic dictionary. Oftentimes when a person is studying deeper things, so the Svarim HaKadoshim can sometimes use words that are symbolic, the Gemara even. When it's talking about a specific thing, we have to know that that specific thing is actually an icon, is a symbol of something much deeper. And this Mekubal, Rav Yaakov Tzvi Yailish, wrote in the Sefer Kehilas Yaakov that Talmud, this notion of Talmud, is not stam a nation, but Talmud who sowed nukva de klipa hamoredes al ba'ala. Talmud is the secret of the feminine aspect of klipa. Klipa means that mystical notion of, everybody knows if there's fruit, so the fruit is surrounded by a peel. And the peel needs to be peeled away to get to the inner fruit. And klipa in Kabbalah means some sort of husk, a shell, which blocks my entry into something holy. It's a klipa mitzad nukva. There's klipa mitzad duchra and klipa mitzad nukva. There are masculine aspects of klipa. There are feminine aspects of klipa. It's not for now. And it's a klipa that's moredes al bala, meaning it's a klipa that rebels against its master. Talmud osios moredes. Talmud, this nation of Talmud, shares the same letters as the word moredes, which means rebellious, the rebellious one. And he goes on to explain that Shlomo HaMelech, during his time, when it talks about Shlomo, the pasuk says, by Shlomo HaMelech, vayivan es Talmud, that he built up Talmud, that means that he was able to somehow fix this klipa. In the days of Shlomo, there was a fixing of Talmud. But if we want to, I guess, succinctly describe our first mystery, the mystery is, why do Chazal tell us? Why did the prophets, the Nevi'im, who established the Yom Tov of Chanukah, why did, during the second Beis HaMikdash, when prophecy was dwindling, and Kimat there was nothing left, why did those who established the Yom Tov of Chanukah make it so that the measurement, and Chazal are telling us something deep over here, that we light the Chanukah candles, achetich l'regel min ashuk, until these Talmudim. Seemingly, as I pointed out before, the word tichle means to destroy. Until this force of the Talmudim disappears from the street. Who are these Talmudim really? And how does lighting Chanukah candles, question number one, how does lighting Chanukah candles somehow alleviate that negative force in the world? Mystery number two. And before I say this mystery, I just want to make a methodological point, which is in parentheses, nothing to do with, particularly to do with Chanukah. I've mentioned many times before, both in this shir and another shirim, that my favorite Gemara in Shas, we're not supposed to pick favorites, but my favorite Gemara in Shas, Bavli and Yerushalmi, happens to be Yerushalmi, is a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. This is a guidepost for me in all of my Torah study and in my Avodas Hashem. That the Gemara says, Divrei Torah are sometimes aniyim bimkomam, v'ashirim b'makom acher. Sometimes words of Torah are poor in their place and rich in another place. What that means is that sometimes you could learn something, oftentimes we learn something, and it doesn't say immediately to me anything so profound, so deep. But if I hold on to it, and I am not quick to throw it away and say, what do I need this for? But I store it somewhere in one of the four chambers of my heart, or in one of the sides of my brain, and I store that information there, and I say, you know what? The Torah is so deep. Kilo adavar reku mikem. The Torah is not an empty thing. And every little piece of Torah that I collect, once I start to have a little bit of a patch work over here and a little bit of a patchwork over here of Torah, I can start sewing them together and make a remarkable quilt. Because divrei Torah are aniyim b'mkomam. Sometimes things are poor in their place, but once I hold on to them and I respect them, then I'll see another idea in a different place and I'll be able to put that together and make a beautiful binyan. And I think this is an example of that. Each of the sources we're about to see, if I would see them individually, I would say, what do I do with that? But because when we learn, if we learn with a certain a certain sense of adornment, that we hold it in our hands even if it doesn't seem like I can learn anything from it immediately. Just like you can't necessarily learn anything from one word until you put it with a sentence and another, and you make a paragraph, then you can actually say something coherent. The same thing is true oftentimes. Divrei Torah are sometimes aniyim b'mkolon, they're poor in their place, but they're rich when you put them in another place. So let's learn. In source number 4, the Shulchan Aruch tells us a very strange din. Tzarech lizar ma'od badlakas neros chanaka afilu ani hamisfarnes al minat staka shoel o mocher ksuso velokeach shemen lahadlik. The Shulchan Aruch tells us in Siman Tav Resh Ayin Aleph that we have to be so careful with the neros chanaka that even an impoverished person, a person who does not have proper funds, has to, even if he's an ani who gets food from the tamchoy, from the public funds, he also has to light Neros Chanukah. He has to even be willing to sell the shirt off his back. Mocher ksuso, a hyperbolic statement that he has to be willing to sell the shirt off his back, and maybe literally, he has to be willing to give everything that he has, every last penny, to light the Neros Chanukah. This is strange, because we know that the general halacha is, it's recorded by the Rama in Hilchos Lulav, by Sukkis in Tafresh Nunvav, that the Rama records that when it comes to the fulfillment of mitzvos, we never fulfill mitzvos if they are going to cost us more than 1/5 of our money. Let's read it inside in source number 5. Umi she'ein lo esrog, a person doesn't have an esrog. Let's say a person only has in his bank account $400, and he goes to the marketplace, and for a lemon, and for a palm branch, and for a piece of a willow tree, right, and a piece of a myrtle tree, so they're charging $100. And this guy only has $400 to his name. So the Rama says, you don't have an esrog, o shar mitzvah soveres, or any other mitzvah, which is a passing mitzvah. Ein sarach levazvez alei ahon rav. You don't have to give up all your money for that. And this is the general principle. It's not only true of esrog, this is true of all mitzvahs. Hamevazvez al yevazvez yoser michomesh. To do a singular mitzvah, we do not spend more than 1/5 of our money. So if you go to the marketplace, and they're charging a set of esrog, lulav, hadas, and ravos, which are all ma'akvin zeh, so I can't do the mitzvah unless I buy all of them, for $100, I'm putter from the mitzvah. Hashem does not expect me. The Torah does not expect me. The will of God does not demand that I give up more than 1/5 of my money. And so it's strange that when it comes to Chanukah all of a sudden, the Shulchan Aruch paskins, based on the Gemara, that I have to be willing to give my very last quarter. Forget about 1/5. I have to give the shirt off my back in order to fill the mitzvahs of Chanukah, the lighting of the neros. But the mystery continues, and then I'll tell you what the overarching mystery is in a second for question number 2. In source number 6, we have another comment of the Rama, now in Hilchas Chanukah and Tafresh Ayin Gimel. Says the Rama, Aser lishtamesh b'ner Chanukah b'in b'shabbos b'in b'chol. It is prohibited, the Gemara we were learning just yesterday, the Machlokes between Rav Chista and Rav Huna, we paskin that it's Aser lishtamesh b'ner Chanukah b'in b'shabbos b'in b'chol. It is prohibited. We are not permitted to use the lights of the Chanukah candles, neither during the week, nor on Shabbos. Va'afilu livdok ma'os olim nosan la'ora aser. Even to check one's money, or count his money in front of the Neros Chanukah, this is something which is not allowed. And it seems strange. Sure, yeah. The Rama writes, "Aser lishtamish b'ner Chanukah b'in b'Shabbos b'in b'Chol, va'afilu livdok ma'os olim nosan la'ora aser." To check our money, to count our money by the lights of Chanukah, is prohibited. All activities are prohibited by the lights of Chanukah. I'm not allowed to look at my watch by the lights of Chanukah. I'm not allowed to read a sefer by the lights of Chanukah. It's a machlokes whether you're allowed to do mitzvah activities by the lights of Chanukah. But we generally paskin haneros halalu kodeshim ve'ein lanu reshus lishtamish b'hem. Nothing, just to look at them, just to meditate over the candles, but not to do any activities in front of the candles. So Rav Yonason is wondering, and all of us are wondering, why is the Shulchan Aruch giving this strange example? We're not allowed to do anything by the lights of Chanukah. Just say, it's Aser Lishtamish Ba'oros Shaner. And yet we seem to be picking up on, and we'll continue that trend in a moment, that there is some surrounding inyan of money that seems to be, I don't want to use the word obsession, but it seems to be the general topic around which all of Hanukkah bases itself. That we have to sell the clothing off of our back. That we have to be careful not to count our money by the neros of Hanukkah. And I'll give you one more, and then we'll summarize. The Magen Avraham brings the custom, and I remember when I was younger, living in Philadelphia, in Lower Merion, I remember that there's a very prestigious yeshiva called the Yeshiva of Philadelphia, which is not too far from where I used to live. And I remember that on Hanukkah, the Bachrim used to come, in fulfillment of this custom of the Magen Avraham, that the Bachrim would come to collect money for the yeshiva, to collect money for tzedakah, for people who needed help financially. And the Magen Avraham brings down the custom, which we're all familiar. Everyone here has heard of Hanukkah gelt. Nogim ha-na'arim ha'aniyim l'saviv b'chanukah l'psachim. That there is a special inyan, dafka by Hanukkah. That all of a sudden, when it comes to Hanukkah, there is a custom for people to go around and collect money for tzedakah for those who are less well off financially. And the Kerem Shlomo, the Rebbe of Bavov, the Admor Mibavov, pointed out, Baruch Hashem, we have a Yiddish source in our shir today. And then I'll take your question, Daniel and Moish. Der Magen Avraham bringt us, der minag is the Arama Yingalach, geven Aram b'deter nach tzedakah. Anybody who really speaks Yiddish probably knows that I just butchered that. But the Magen Avraham brings the minag, that the Yingalach, the young kids, the Bachrim, go around and they get tzedakah money. They get Chanukah geld. Ken men zok the remez, if I can, I'd like to bring a remez, a hint. As Neis Chanukah, the word Neis Chanukah, the miracle of Chanukah, batropt 199 equals exactly 199. Batropt, it equals exactly 199. Punkt wiffel des wert tzedakah, the exact numerical value of the word tzedakah. That the whole Indian of Chanukah is bound up in this Indian of tzedakah. That we have to not count our money by the nearest Chanukah. That we have to be willing to spend our last penny to buy the nearest of Chanukah. Mystery number two, what is the connection? What is going on here? This seeming connection between Chanukah and money. Tzedakah and Neis Chanukah. 199. Yeah, Reb Daniel.
That's
source number. That's the Kerem Shlomo of Bavel.
We figured out how to use the light for the Hanukkah candles, to use anything. So now, like, I know, like, in my house at least, we'll light in the kitchen, and then, you know, we won't turn off the lights. So, like, you know, like, we'll have the kitchen lights will be on too, and let's say, like, we'll be eating dinner, or like, we're doing stuff, the Hanukkah candles are there. So now, how do you know that you're not actually using the lights of the Hanukkah candles?
So even I'll say one step further. You guys are mahadrin, mini mahadrin, that you keep your light, meaning we have electric lights, so we don't really need it. But afilu in the Heintike days, when there was not electricity, what would people do? They would have the shamash. That candle, which is an extra candle, is a token candle, which, you're correct, how do we measure light is something which is so amorphous, you can't say that I'm using this light and not that light. But just by having one candle, which seems to exclude all the other candles, that creates at least the impression that I'm not using these candles for my... And nowadays, Kal v'chomer, we have electricity, like you're saying, in your house. The fact that we keep the candles burning while the electricity is going, of course we're not using the candles for our primary light. Okay? Oh, one last little piece from the Rambam, which I didn't put in the Makoros. We'll come back to it at the end, but the Rambam writes that part of what the Yevanim did when the Yevanim came to attack the Jewish people, is it talks about how the Yevanim came and they defiled the Beis HaMikdash, and they had all these horrible decrees about how the chiefs, the officers of Yavon, would come and would defile Jewish women when they were getting married. Horrible, horrible things. And the Rambam writes something which is very strange. The Rambam doesn't really give him a core for it. But it definitely adds to this seeming mystery, this connection between Hanukkah and the inyan of money. The Rambam writes in his Mishneh Torah and the laws of Hanukkah, he writes that the Yevanim Pashtu Yadam b'mamonam shel Yisrael. That the Yevanim, Pashtu Yadam, they put forth their hands towards the money of the Jewish people. Something which doesn't really seem to have any strong makor, at least clear makor, in Shas and in the Midrashim. And the Rambam says that the Yevanim came and they Pashtu Yadam. And this is strange for a number of reasons. Number one, why doesn't it say that they stole the money or that they took the money? That they pushed the other means they stretched out their hands against the money of the Jewish people. And that certainly adds to this second mystery of Hanukkah. One, who are these Tarmudayin and why are we trying to destroy them with our Neros Hanukkah? How are we spiritually undermining them with our Neros Hanukkah? And two, what is this connection between money and Hanukkah? One or two more mysteries before we try to make some clarity here. There is a very, very interesting esoteric medrash which compares the four non-kosher animals that the Torah speaks of, four animals that seem to be kosher but are actually non-kosher, the camel, two types of rabbits, and the pig, each of which have one of the simonim of kashrus but not the other, giving off the impression that they are kosher animals. But in fact, they are not kosher animals. And the Medrash compares each of these non-kosher animals to a different one of the four exiles that the Jewish people suffered in. And the Medrash reads, the Medrash Rabbah, Parsha Yud Gimel Piskahei, Es HaGamal Zu Bavel. The camel, this is the Babylonian exile. Ves HaShafan Zu Madai. Ves HaArneves Zu Yavan. Ves HaChazir Zu Edom. So, really, we could spend a very long time trying to explain each of these, and what is the connection between the Gamal and Bavel, what is the connection between the Shafan and Madai. But for our purposes, since we're studying the Indian of Hanukkah, let's try to understand what is the connection between the Arneves, this rabbit, the bunny rabbit, the Arneves, and Greece. Why should the Arneves be connected to Greece? And to make the question a little bit stronger, to show you that this is not just happenstance. An example of Divrei Torah, Aniyim B'mkoman. We come across this medrash and we say, what does that mean? Yavan is a rabbit? What does it have to do with anything? To show you that it's not just happenstance, but that if you hold on to this medrash and then later you're studying something else and you come across, you'll see an unbelievable thing. That Yavan is somehow connected to the rabbit. What is the connection to the rabbit? So take a look with me in source number 18. An amazing Gemara. The Gemara tells us that the Greek king Talmai HaMelech, anyone here ever heard of the Septuagint, the Targum Shivim, the translation of the Torah into Greek? Now, why is it called the Targum Shivim? Presumably because it was translated by 70 rabbis, but in truth, if you look in the Gemara says that it was 72 rabbis, okay? Our tradition and the Greek tradition is not the same, but what can you do? The Gemara says in Megillah and Daf Tes Omer Aleph, take a look at this. Tanya Maisa B'Talmai HaMelech Shekines Shivim U'Shnayim Zakenim V'Echnisam B'Shivim U'Shnayim Batim. Talmai HaMelech, a Greek king who wanted the Torah translated into Greek, put 72 rabbis into 72 jail cells. V'lo gila lehem al ma kinsan. He did not explain to them why he was making them go into their jail cells. V'nichnas etzel kol echad v'echad v'amr lehem kasfuli Torahs Moshe Rabchem. And he said to each of them, write for me a translation of your Rabbi Moshe's Torah. Nasan HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'lev kol echad v'echad. Hashem put into the heart of each of these rabbis to make several changes that they knew that these people would not be able to understand. A classic example, one of those changes, v'eskiman kulam l'das achas v'kosvulo elokim bara bereshis. They translated the Torah as if it was written elokim bara bereshis, which means that God created in the beginning, as opposed to in the beginning God created. Why would they do that? Because they were afraid that the Greeks, as Rashi explains, they would be afraid that the Greeks would misunderstand and would say bereshis bara elokim. Ah, someone named this deity called bereshis Bara, created Elohim, created God. Look, even the Jews believe in polytheism, just like we believe in polytheism. Bereshis, this force called Bereshis, Bara Elohim, it created God. And what else did it create? Ves HaShemayim, Ves HaAretz, it also created the heavens and the earth. And we should worship this God called Bereshis. They made several other changes. Listen to this change, and tell me if your skin does not start to sizzle a little bit. If your hair does not stand on end. What did they write? They wrote Kasvulo, they wrote for Talmai HaMelech Es Tziras HaRaglayim Velo Kasvulo Ve'es HaArneves. When they were writing the names of the four animals that are not kosher, and they got up to the Arneves, that Arneves, which the Gemara tells us, the Medrash tells us, is the animal which corresponds to Yavan, they changed the word from Es HaArneves to the words Ve'es Tziras HaRaglayim, the short-handed, the short-footed one, the one with short legs and short hands. Ipnei, why did they do that? She'ishto shel Talmai, because the wife of Talmai HaMelech, Arneves Shma. Her name was Bunny, right? Her name was Arneves. And what would he say? Shelo Yomar, so he should not say, Schaku bi Yehudim, the Jews are making fun of me. They're saying my wife is a non-kosher animal. They put my wife's name in the Torah. In order to alleviate that concern, they changed the word Arneves to the short-legged one. Now clearly Chazal are telling us here a very deep mystery. Talmai HaMelech's wife's name happened to have been Arneves. Was that even her real name? Maybe it's just saying, and I'm not saying that it is for sure, but I'm saying that maybe in addition to being her name, they're telling us that, what does it mean that it's someone's wife? It means it's his other half. It means it's some part of his essence. The essence of Greek is somehow bound up with this rabbit. And I want to understand also, as our third mystery, why Dafka, they changed it to the one with short hands. They changed the definition of the rabbit as the one with short hands. The Tziras HaRaglayim, the one with short feet. Reb Moshe.
So now, if they switched up, like, you know, they purposely switched, instead of Bereshit Bara Elokim, like Elokim Bara Bereshit. So, but now the Greeks now think that that's the original, like, so like...
No, they don't need our Torah anyway. The fact that, you're right, that they weren't 100% accurate to the reading of the Torah, but it was we have a tradition that this day, the Gemara tells us that on this day that they translated the Torah into Greek, this is one of the greatest tragedies that befell the Jewish people since the Chet HaEgel. That our Torah being translated into a language so that people can misunderstand it. I mean, the whole narrative of this Gemara is telling us that the translation of the Torah into another language is bound to cause error. And we try to curb that error as much as possible, but it's very difficult to curb that error considering the fact that when you translate the Torah into another language, it causes lack of clarity.
What is the exact?
Yeah.
It also doesn't matter that if you translate it, because like they're only reading it just to criticize it, and then to persecute
the
Jews. It doesn't matter if they're reading the right thing or the wrong thing.
What is Elohim Bara Bereshit? It means God created in the beginning?
Right.
All right. Well, what's the actual meaning of Bereshit Bara Elohim?
In the beginning of God's creating, the heaven and earth. Bereshit Bara Elohim. That's in the beginning of God's creating the heavens and the earth. Okay? So, let's try to understand some of these mysteries. Oh, I have one more. Let's come back to the Talmudayin for a second. Divrei Torah, aniyim b'mkom v'ashir b'makom acher. Words of Torah are poor in their place, and they're rich in another place. So we don't know who these Talmudayin are, but let's get more of an idea of who they are. There's another Gemara, which, not surprisingly, we'll see centers around money, and is also clearly speaking to us and telling us to connect the dots between everything we're talking about in source number 10. This is the Gemara on Shabbos and Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. And the Gemara tells us, great story. Tanu Rabbanan Le'olam Ye Adam An V'nasan K'Hillel V'Alya Kaptan K'Shamay. A person should always be humble like Hillel and not be a kaptan. Not be overly strict with people like Shamay. Ma'isa B'Shnei B'nei Adam, a story with two people, Shehem Miruzet said that they made a bet with one another. They were arguing with one another, and they made a bet. Amru ko mi sheyelach veyiknit es Hillel. Anybody who can go and get Hillel to become angry, who can get him to lose his anger, lose his cool, yitol arba meos zuz. He will get 400 zuz. Now, if we have time at the end, it's an amazing thing. Baruch Hashem, I told you that we were just misaying the Aleph Beis together in our Chabura, and the last letter is tough. And the letter Tav has everything to do, and for those who are interested, if we don't have time, you can go listen to this year. But it has everything to do with this number. Four, they were betting dafka 400 zuz. But we can talk about it at the end of this time. Amar echad mehem, ani aknit nu oso hayom. I will go and get him angry today. What was the day? Hayom Erev Shabbos haya. That day was Erev Shabbos. Hillel, the Gemara says, chafaf es rosho. Hillel was in the middle of showering. He was washing his hair. Halach v'avar al pesach beso. And this guy went to the opening of Hillel's house. And he said, Amar mikan Hillel, mikan Hillel. Where is this Hillel guy? Imagine speaking to the Gadol Hador. He goes and he speaks so chutzpahdik. Where is Hillel? He starts screaming, where is Hillel? I'm looking for Hillel. And Hillel's in the middle of taking a shower. Hillel nis'atev, Hillel put on a robe, vayatzel krosso, he goes out to greet him, he's probably got the shampoo still in his hair. Amar b'ni, ma'ata mevakish, how can I help you? And he asks him the ridiculous question, he says, why is it that the Babylonians have such round heads? And Hillel says, ooh, wow, that's a great question you ask, and he patiently answers him, not our Indian right now, what he answers him. And he comes back again, he starts, now Hillel's doing the conditioner, right, the first time he was doing, right? So he's now, second time, he's conditioning his hair. The guy comes and he's screaming, Mikan Hillel, Mikan Hillel. And again, Hillel patiently gets dressed and he comes to the door and he says, how can I help you? And the guy says, why do the Africans have such big feet? And Hillel says, wow, it's an amazing question. He's patient with him. And he sees he can't get Hillel to lose his cool. He says, all right, I'm going to try one more time. He comes back again. And he knocks on the door and the Gemara says, he starts screaming and banging on the door, Mikan Hillel, Mikan Hillel. Nis'ati if yotza l'krosu amar lo b'ni. Ma'ata mevakish? What can I? How can I help you? Amar lo she'ela yeshli lishal. I have a question to ask. So Amar lo sha'ol. He said, ask the question. So he said, listen. He said, mipnei ma einayim shel tarmudayin trutos. Why is it that the eyes of the tarmudayin, Rashi writes, that their eyes are aruchos, they're long. They're long and thin. Why? So Rashi writes, I'm sorry, so the Gemara says, Hillel answered him and said, you know why the eyes of the Tarmudayan are long and thin? Because, he says, B'ni she'ela gedola sha'alta, you asked a great question. Mipnei shedarn bein hacholos. It's because they live amongst the sand. And since they live amongst the sand, Hashem gave them that they should have thin eyes. Rashi explains, al pipshat, v'yichnes bo hachol. That the sand would get into their eyes, so Hashem made it that their eyes should be thin, so it won't be as easy for the sand to get into their eyes. Very mysterious, very strange. So now let's begin to unpack this whole thing. You know, in Hebrew, we speak about one of the types of midos, a bad midah that a person can have is to be someone who is a meitzar ayin. Someone who has tsaras ayin. It means that they're a stingy person. It means that they're a penny pincher. Right? They look at things with small eyes because they don't, right? You ever sit down to eat dinner and you take a lot and you're being very generous with yourself and your mother says to you, wow, you have very big eyes. You know, you thought you wanted to eat so much, but then you only eat a tiny bit. So to have small eyes, to be meitzar ayin means to be a stingy person. And so now we're beginning to come because I want to share with you something. This Gemara about Hillel and this conversation, Hillel understood that even if this guy didn't understand it, even if this guy couldn't understand it, Hillel understood that he was saying something very deep. And he was asking, why did the Tarmudan have such small slits for eyes? And he explained, why are they, in other words, what Hillel heard when the guy asked the question was, why are they so stingy? And this was the response of Hillel. He said, because they live amongst the cholos, which means sand, but it also comes from the Lashon of chol. What's chol? It means mundane. The regular, as opposed to the kadosh. Because the Tarmudayin are people who are the last ones in the marketplace. Because they live amongst the chol. Because these are people who don't understand the value and the true worth of the physical world. They live amongst the chol, and they don't know how to use it properly.
Regulars.
The mundane, the regular.
Say they were
like, oh, so good, good, good. So we're going to see. What does Chanukah come to do? So Chanukah comes to teach us that when something is connected to the eternal, when something is connected to the eternal... One second. So this is what Chanukah comes to do. This is what Chanukah comes to fix. Chanukah comes to fix our way of looking at the world as chol, as being mundane and as being non-sacred. Because going back to the beginning, as we quoted from Matisyahu, the premise is we're born in blood and we leave the world penniless. We come in with nothing, we leave with nothing. And the only thing that we can do is that while we're in this world, between the time of when we're born in blood and leave the world penniless, when we're born with nothing and leave with nothing, that time in between is the time when we can take the chol, the mundane, and make it kadosh, and by making it kadosh, make it last forever. Money is a symbol. It's a symbol for all physicality. In the parsha that we're studying now, Parshas Vayetze, there's a pasuk which includes a word which appears only one time in the Torah. The word sulam. There's a fancy word for that, we learned it once before, the word hapax legomenon. It means a word that appears only one time in a body of literature. And the pasuk tells us in source number 13, Vayachalom v'hinei sulam mutzav arza v'rosha magia hashamayma. There was a dream of Yaakov Avinu with a ladder that reached to the heavens. It went down to the earth and reached up to the heavens. Says the Baal HaTurim in a very strange comment, sulam, the word sulam, a ladder, is begematria mamon, which means money. Sulam is begematria mamon. A ladder, what is a ladder? A ladder is something which allows me to go from where I am right now and to climb up to a very high place. And alternatively, a ladder is something which can take me from where I am right now and I can go and descend into the deepest pit. Money, which is a symbol of all physicality, physicality, chol, the mundane, that which is not kadosh, has the ability to be used. If made kadosh, it becomes a ladder upon which I can ascend to the highest heights. If I engage chol as a penny pincher, as a person who is attempting to imbibe as much physical pleasure as I can, that causes me to descend, to use a ladder to descend into the lowest depths. Chanukah comes and rectifies that. And I want to show you that. There's a Medrash Tanchuma that says, in source number 17, Amar HaKosov Ki Lekach Tov Nasati Lechem. When a person can connect that which is ephemeral, that which is temporal, to that which is eternal, that which is forever, then a person has entered the realm of Kedusha. They have moved from the realm of Chol to the realm of Kedusha. Ki Lekach Tov Nasati Lechem. Hashem says, I gave you a Torah. You know what the Torah does? It takes the Chol of the Tarmudayin and it makes it eternal. There are two businessmen who stood next to each other. One of them has fine linen, the other one has pepper. He's a spice merchant. Come, let's do a deal. Barter. I will trade you pepper for your linen. Right? We'll make nechlef beini uveincha, v'natol zeh esa palplin, v'zeh esa mateches. When I give you spices in exchange for clothing, and you give me clothing in exchange for spices, you know what happens? We're both left with less than what we had before. But when I come to the world of Torah, says the Medrash, listen to these beautiful words of the Medrash, when the Torah comes, al Torah eina kein, when it comes to the Torah, zeh shona seder zrayim v'zeh shona seder moed. One person learns this Masechta, and another learns this Masechta. This one learns this Seder, and this one learns another Seder. And I teach you Seder Zerayim, and you teach me Seder Moed. Neither of us are left with less than we had. Both of us are left with more than we had before. When it comes to all business in the world, when it comes to any other Lekach, any other Mekach or Memkar, there's a loss when I give you something in exchange for what you give me. When it comes to the Torah, what I give you and you give me, we both are left with more in the end. And that's the secret of what it means when it says in the Medrash, Ki lekach tov nasati lachem. I gave you a good lekach. I gave you a good business. The type of business where you could share it with another person and you lose nothing thereby. There's only one thing in the physical world, friends. There's only one thing in the physical world that has that property. You know what it is? Fire. When you take a candle and you light 100 other candles, the first candle lost nothing from the fire. When you take fire and you spread it to other things, you lose nothing. It's like Torah. Torah is compared to fire. Hashem's Torah is called Eish Das. And of course, the entire celebration of Hanukkah is not so much that Hashem made a miracle that the oil burned, but that the Torah was restored. That the Yavanim came la'ashkicham Torasecha, to make us forget the Torah. The wisdom of Yavan came to darken out the Torah and to say that our wisdom is superior to your wisdom. The thing is that the wisdom of Torah teaches us this lekach tov nasati lechem is like the fire which is passed from one person to another person, and we all increase our yield when we share with one another. Now we go back and we look at this seemingly strange, repetitious notion of money coming up over and over again on Hanukkah. It turns out that Hanukkah is there to help teach us how to fix money. We light the Hanukkah candles ad shetichle regel min hashuk, until the tarmudah, until this mentality of those who stay late in the marketplace to earn an extra dollar off of another person, because they don't realize that when you connect something to the eternal, then a little bit of oil could last forever. Then even though we leave the world penniless and we can't take anything with us, but every interaction between us and the physical world is no longer chol, but becomes kodesh, becomes an eternal moment which is locked in because I viewed it through the eyes of the Torah and I used it through the eyes of the Torah. That's why even our very last pennies have to be used to purchase the neiros of Hanukkah. Because when a person realizes that physicality is a means to a greater end, on Hanukkah, when that becomes rectified, even the little bit that I have, I'm not giving it away. I'm not trading my money for something and losing it, but I'm making it eternal. That's why Dafka, I'm not allowed to count my money by the Hanukkah candles. Because counting money is the ultimate example of saying, I have this much. I can only consume this much because I have X number of dollars. And when that money is gone, it's gone forever. As the Svarim HaKadoshim say, as the Tzaddikim say, you want to know what the greatest bank account in the world is for your money? The safest place? Giving it to another person. Tzedaka. Not all of it. But giving your money, being generous with your money is the greatest bank account. You know why? Because once you put it in your own bank account, what's the safest place in the world to put your money? Put it in gold bars and put it on the bottom of the Twin Towers. For sure it's safe there. Nothing's ever going to happen. But nothing's safe forever. The only thing which can guarantee that it becomes eternal is if you take something physical and you give it to someone else, or you use it for some exalted eternal means. If you are generous with another person. Now let's go back. Yavan is called the Arneves. And the Arneves, what's the character which describes Arneves? It's like Arneves is short-handed. What does it mean to be short-handed? It's the same thing as being... He doesn't reach out to another person. It's only what I can use this money for myself. That's why the Gullus of Yavan, the Medrash says, is the Arneves. This is not remarkable. Divrei Torah, Aniyim b'mkomam v'ashirim b'makom acher. What it means to be short-handed means that you don't go and give towards another one. You don't open your hand either to another person or to an eternal end. So I'll share with you an amazing teaching from the Shlach HaKadosh. Now we're starting to put things together, we'll come to the end. The Shlach HaKadosh, in source number 19, wrote that next week in the Parsha, in Parshas Vayishlach, we're going to have a showdown between the children of Yaakov and the children of Esav. And that showdown is preceded by a mysterious episode of Yaakov Avinu crossing over the Yabok, the Nahar Yabok, and is attacked by this angelic creature who we know to be the Malach of Esav. And the Shlach HaKadosh says, I'll say outside, although you can read it inside in source number 19, the Shlach HaKadosh says that the rumble between the Malach of Esav and Yaakov Avinu, our father Yaakov, is the rumble between a pach, the pachim ketanim, that Yaakov Avinu went back to get a pach katan. He went back to get a small vessel. which the Baal Turim says is a hint to the pach shemen, that small pach, that pachim ketanim that Yaakov went back to get, is the pachim ketanim of Chanukah. That he was going to elevate those sparks in the pachim ketanim so he could bring about the miracle of Chanukah. And that when he went across to go get that pachim ketanim, he was met by the Saros shel Esav, and their argument, their machlokes, their battle could be described as the argument between the pach of Yaakov and the kaf of the malach of Esav. That kaf, that the malach of Esav hit Yaakov in the kaf yerech, in the thigh, right? He hit him in the thigh. And that word in Hebrew for the kaf yerech is the place where Yaakovina was damaged. And the Shlach says, if you think it's a coincidence that they're arguing and that this whole thing is over a pach versus a kaf, you're sorely mistaken. Because the letters of the Hebrew alphabet, chaf and pe, are not just letters, but they are also words. The word kaf means not only the letter kaf, but it means a kaf. What's a kaf? What's a kapit in Hebrew? A kaf? A kaf means a hand, right? A kapit means a spoon, because you use it to hold something like that, yeah? A kaf is your hand. And what's a pach? Pach is this thing. A pach is this thing that Yaakov wants to go back, this jug of oil, this jug that Yaakov wants to go back. But the word pei, what is a peh in Hebrew spelled pehe? Is a mouth. And the Shlach Kodesh says a remarkable thing. He says the word pach consists of a closed pei. Picture the letter pei. It's closed on the bottom as opposed to the pei sofit, which is open on the bottom. It's called a pei stuma, a closed pei, a closed mouth, and a chaf ptucha, an open kaf. What does that mean? It means the closed mouth and an open hand. Whereas Esav, Malach, comes, and his strength is in the kaf, which is a closed chaf, a closed hand, and an open pei, an open mouth. It's the secret, says the Shlach, of what we say, that a person should, what? Say a little and do a lot. A Jew comes on Chanukah, and he learns the teaching of Chanukah, which is that fire tells me that when I have something and I connect it to the Torah, the Eish Das Lamo of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then it becomes eternal. When I connect all of my physical things to something eternal, then it doesn't disappear after I use it. Adrabah, just the opposite. It becomes, it is sewn into the fabric of my nitzchias, of my eternity. And so the whole inyan of Chanukah, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe explains in source number 20, the whole inyan of that, what Yavon was doing, by Pashtu Yadam B'mamonan Shal Yisrael. It doesn't say, he points out, it doesn't say that they took the money of the Jewish people, but rather it says, Pashtu Yadam B'mamonan Shal Yisrael. What that means is, they tried to make the Jewish people stingy, and to make us look at physicality in the way that they did, which is as an ends unto itself. The Olympics of the Greeks, where they reveled and praised the human body as an ends unto itself, is antithetical to a Torah value which looks at all physicality, money being the ultimate symbol of that, as a mere means to a greater end. And so, we come back to the beginning, and we now understand deeply, or more deeply, that even though we're born with nothing and we leave with nothing, Chanukah is the Yom Tov that teaches us how to make the most out of everything that we have. Everything that we have now, we could choose. All of our possessions are a ladder, or a sulam. And that sulam we could use to elevate ourselves to the highest place. And that sulam could take us down to the lowest place. And Chanukah is that Yom Tov. That Yom Tov that teaches me that physicality is not what it seems. Physicality is not all that it seems to be. And that which I am affecting with my physical interaction with the world is even deeper. Is even deeper and more profound and more lasting than all of the pleasures that I could have and take for myself without the Torah. Chanukah, which is the celebration of the rededication of the Torah. The Chanukas HaMikdash is only part of it. The Chanukas HaTorah, the fact that the Torah was redeemed during the days of Yavan, to show what it really was, helps us to understand physicality in the greatest of ways. Hopefully Hashem will bring Chanukah haba alinu l'tova soon, and we'll be zocha to tap a little bit into those reservoirs of Kedusha by staring at the nearest Chanukah and perfecting and fixing our way of looking at the world.